This is Dr. Holly Lucille's Mindful Medicine. Here's Dr. Holly Lucille.
Hi, folks. Welcome to Mindful Medicine. It is Dr. Lucille, and I'm excited about this show. I say that all the time, but I really am excited about every single topic that I have on this podcast because, as you know, for Mindful Medicine, just trying to wake you up, be able to use your own mind, especially when it comes to all the information out there when it comes to your health. But listen, America is currently, and you all know this, overwhelmed by a series of health challenges, including an underreported, although it's being more and more reported, opioid epidemic, failing Medicaid and Medicare. We know about that. It's in the news all the time. Obesity crisis. And folks, this is despite the fact that there are posts and tweets and blogs and pop wellness doctors and all of this, and even my show, that there's more information now more than ever about how you can stay in shape, how you can lose weight, so that obesity crisis is still on the rise, brought on by the deluge of unhealthy processed foods. And the result is a health landscape that's confusing. We know that. That's why I do this show. It's contradictory. Yep, that too. And leaves people feeling lost and exhausted. But guess what? I have somebody here that's going to help us continue this conversation and navigate it. Her name is Dr. Robin Miller. She's an MD. She's an established author. She wrote The Smart Woman's Guide to Midlife and Beyond, and Kids Ask the Doctor. I love it. She's got the entire sort of lifespan covered there. She has gathered the knowledge, insights, and anecdotes offered in this book over the course of 33 years of treating patients using the principles of integrative medicine. She's board certified in internal medicine. She trained with Dr. Andy Weil as an integrative medicine fellow at the University of Arizona. I just want to start talking to you right now. You've got so much more on your bio, but Dr. Robin Miller, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Wow. So you're like 92 years old, right?
No. I started when I was 10.
Because you've done a lot, but you really are a woman after my own heart, just speaking my language. There is such a huge, 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 huge problem out there. And what frustrates me so much, Robin, is that there is more. I mean, we're going to talk about this, and there's more information now more than ever. And I still see people stuck. I still see our chronic health issues on the rise. And I still see people struggling on a daily basis to have simple health goals get accomplished, like losing a couple pounds, getting those cholesterol numbers down, eating better, doing food prep, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm so glad to have you here.
Thank you.
So, tell me, so give me a little bit more, like, how did you get into this?
Well, I actually was in a regular practice for many years. I started out in research, moved to a regular practice. And one day I realized, you know, I couldn't see patients every 10 minutes. It just wasn't working for me. And I was in the room with a woman, and I knew that what she really needed for me to do was to listen to her instead of write out the 10th prescription that I was writing out. And actually, I stopped. I quit. I walked away. And that's when I did the fellowship with Andrew Weil. And when I came back to practicing, I decided to do it differently. So I decided to do a true integrative medicine practice where I spent an hour and a half with each new patient, half an hour with follow-ups, and an hour each year for physicals. So I actually really know my patients. And I found that when I actually listened to people, I learned a lot, and I could tell what was going on with them. People will tell you what's wrong with them 99.9% of the time. And in doing that, what I figured out was what I needed to do for each individual. And that's how I came to what I found and I talk about in our book. I just started learning.
Your book, please correct me if I'm wrong, is called Healed, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That was confusing for me on the document that I was reading off. So the book, just for my listeners' sake, Healed, Health and Wellness for the 21st Century. I love it. Okay. Continue on. Sorry about that.
Yeah. So anyway, I realized that everybody's different. Everyone's unique. And there's different things that help different people. And there's some simple things that I have learned that make such a big difference. Other physicians aren't doing it. Maybe they haven't read about it. Maybe done it. It's all scientifically evidence-based, but they work. So for example, for depression, do you test patients' MTHFR levels, their genetic marker?
Sure.
So MTHFR is a gene that codes for how we process folic acid. It codes for the enzyme. So when you take folic acid in your diet, which we all need, a series of enzymes work on it and turn it into L-methylfolate. L-methylfolate is what your body uses to make serotonin, dopamine, and norepinephrine. All those things that make you feel good and give you energy. Most of us have one mutation. Many of us have two. So that means your L-methylfolate levels are either down by 30%, or if you have two mutations, can be down by 70%. And that's how it's been our whole life. If you give people L-methylfolate, it's amazing what happens. They feel better. It lifts their, in many cases, lifts their depression. And what people don't realize is that our gut is lined with brain cells that make serotonin. So it helps irritable bowel as well. That's something really simple. It's a blood test or a gene test that can be done with a simple cheek swab. Insurance actually pays for it. Medicare pays for it. It's no longer considered experimental. And L-methylfolate you can get over the counter.
Yeah, this is great. This is, I mean, there's this field of genetics and epigenetics and the nutrigenomics that I think is expanding. And certainly more practitioners are learning more and more about it, but that is a very simple thing. And I love it. So I want to talk a little bit more about your book Healed, because sure. It says combines cutting edge science. I love that with some basic listeners. Listen up, basic key advice to help anyone take charge of their own health. That's what this show is about. This is what I want more than anything for people just to, first of all, combine that science. I think it's great. People want that. They want the evidence. They want it statistically. We want to see it clinically. We want to see it transform into somebody's health, right? Including drug-free ways to diminish the effects of chronic illness and depression. Drug-free. Drugs are great. I was the daughter of two pharmacists. There is a place for everything, but the overuse of them obviously is causing a tremendous amount of illness in our country. And so this book challenges readers to discover their best self with solutions made to maximize wellness, physically, mentally, and emotionally. So I really love the book, the premise of the book. I think it's amazing. The simple MTHFR test, a lot of people are getting the 23andMe done, et cetera. You just need to find somebody who can interpret it and allow you to know how much you are under methylating and what you need to do. Because you're right, a lot of people start feeling better from a depression perspective, even from, as you said, IBS or fatigue.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, what are the keys and evidence to a long and healthy life? Give me some of those.
Well, it's interesting. So basically feeling good is a key part of it. But when you look at the longevity studies, it's interesting how people can actually overcome tough childhoods later in adult life. So it actually fades when they hit 50, which is amazing. People who've had a college education tend to have a longer life. Avoiding alcohol to excess, obviously. A stable marriage is interesting. So men in a stable marriage do really well for a long life. Women do better when they're happy. So men will stick with a bad marriage and they'll be fine. Women need out. The other basics for a long and healthy life are to have a happy, healthy heart, healthy brain, and healthy gut. And we actually talk about that in the book, which is really important. So I talk about a new risk factor called TMAO, trimethylamine oxide, which is what the gut bacteria produce when you eat red meat, farm-raised fish, and egg yolks, and things like that. So you can actually avoid TMAO or decrease it if you use extra virgin olive oil when you cook or when you take grapeseed extract or, believe it or not, drink Guinness stout. It helps lower TMAO levels. And
what did you say? You cut out. Yes. Okay, great. Yes. So guts. And once again, I love that you are an MD. You are combining this cutting edge science, right? So TMAO, yep. what we know and how you can simple ways, basic ways that you can reduce some of those things. I love it. How does gut health affect our mood and how do we keep it happy? Now, I know more than anything, I mean, as a naturopathic doctor, heal the whole. I've always said the hole that starts in your mouth and ends way back there is so important to our overall wellness. Gut health has so much to do with our overall health. Reinforce this for my listeners.
Oh, the gut is where it's all at. I mean, when I started looking into this, it was amazing. Gut bacteria are so important, and having healthy gut bacteria are so important. And we don't realize how much the gut influences us. So there is the microbiome, which is like 3 pounds of gut bacteria that we all carry around with us. So it needs to be healthy. If it's not, if you have bad bacteria, unhealthy bacteria, what it does is it thins the wall of the colon of the gut, and lipopolysaccharide leaks out, and that's what we call leaky gut. And that is what can cause inflammation. inflammation such as autoimmune diseases, heart disease, you name it. It also, the gut also affects how we feel and our mood. And it also affects how we gain or lose weight. So there's a really interesting observational thing that happened when doctors were doing fecal transplant. And fecal transplant happens when you transplant, basically you give somebody else's poop to get rid of antibiotic-associated colitis, C. difficile colitis. Sometimes antibiotics won't help to kill the C. difficile, but what does help is if you give them healthy bacteria from someone else. So that's what a fecal transplant is. So there was a mother and daughter combination where the mom got stool from the daughter. She had a fecal transplant from the daughter. The daughter was heavy, the mom was thin. So the mom got the fecal transplant, her antibiotic-associated C. difficile colitis went away, but the mom, who had been thin, couldn't stop gaining weight. And it was probably from the transplanted bacteria from the daughter. And we've seen that in mouse studies as well. And that, in addition to thin mice becoming fat and fat mice becoming thin as a result of fecal transplant, their behavior changes based on the transplanted poop that they got. So it's pretty remarkable.
It is remarkable, and I've seen cases in my practice so much with fecal transplants. Just for our listeners' edification, what is exactly a fecal transplant?
So a fecal transplant is basically when you get poop from someone else, and it can be given orally in capsules, or it can be given through a colonoscopy. So basically you're taking someone else's poop and giving it to someone else, either through the colon or orally. It's interesting. It used to be done with relatives or people we know, but now there's actually a stool bank, a poop bank, that comes from MIT. And it's very restricted, so they make sure that the people that donate have a low BMI, there's no diseases, and they're looking at the immune qualities of the poop, believe it or not. So I was at a conference where they were talking about donor B, who has amazing immune qualities of his poop. So if you're ever going to get a fecal transplant from MIT, ask for donor B.
I know people get a little bit freaked out about the whole thing, but I have to tell you, if you need it, it's so effective.
It is.
I've had somebody just turn their devastating health issues around due to a fecal transplant. So this is something. Now, we've heard about coffee enemas that sometimes freak people out too, but I hear about, and this is interesting, and as you have said, sort of in your introduction, the state of things right now are contradictory. They're confusing for folks. Okay, so now we've also heard about coffee enemas that freak people out a little bit, extremely effective. But as far as the research on coffee, and we said in the beginning, the landscape right now, I think for people, and I see it all the time, and it breaks my heart, is that the information out there is contradictory. People are confused. And so there are... we hear about health benefits about coffee. Tell me, what do you think about that?
Well, I love coffee, and I'm sure you saw the results of a study that came out a couple of weeks ago that showed it actually prolongs our life.
Yeah.
The interesting
longevity
thing about it is it could be decaf. It didn't have to be caffeinated coffee, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, and that's, I want to make this point because I think this is really important when we're talking to folks about the headlines, first of all, especially when you get headlines about a study. It's important to think about it all the way through and think about it with somebody who knows. Talk it through with somebody who might know a little bit more, like with plant medicine in general. A lot of times, because I had patients emailing me like, hey, I saw this study, I can go back on my coffee. A lot of times I have cut down or asked people to cut down their caffeine or coffee consumption, mostly because of I think coffee, like many other plants, extremely medicinal in many different ways. Sometimes the caffeine, though, people were utilizing it to sort of medicate their wake cycle. It wasn't that organic energy that they woke up with. And then it was also sort of disturbing their sleep cycle because caffeine does, for some folks, take a long time to metabolize. And so because of an adrenal perspective, I was just having them pull back. And I think that's really important when we talk about things like this. But you're right. I think coffee is extremely medicinal. Coffee is amazing.
It
People
is.
People love it. Yeah. What about chocolate? What about chocolate?
Chocolate.
Is it good for us?
I love chocolate. But it's coffee. It needs to be eaten in moderation.
Yeah.
Chocolate is good for our brain. It shows that it improves blood flow in seniors. If they're having blood flow problems, if they have 2 cups of hot chocolate a day, pretty amazing. It can help the heart. The thing I like to use chocolate for is for cough. So I always tell people if they're like at a play or someplace, keep a little chocolate, like a little square of dark chocolate in your purse or in your pocket and slip it on your tongue and let it melt. And it'll stop you from coughing for about an hour if you have like a chronic cough.
That's extremely great. People will love that. You know, and it's like, great. Once again, in moderation, like you said, you know, I we had friends over last Friday and I made this big tray and charcuterie and, you know, grapes and all this stuff. And it was like sort of savory. And then just to finish it off at night with a glass of wine, I had a, you know, a high cacao content chocolate bar, just to, you know, that little palate cleanser. And usually I'll do that probably mostly every day. I think I have a little square of dark chocolate, but it was funny. My friend, I said something the next day to my partner, but I was like, did you see how much chocolate she took out? It was like half the bar, literally. It was like this, yeah, this big. And I'm like, that's not how that's supposed to be consumed, I don't think. But those are the things that, you know, yeah, I think are important that people dial down. All right. So I want to talk to you about something called this scream cream. Now, I see a lot of women in my practice. I see a lot of men too, but I see a lot of women, and I'm being a menopausal woman myself. People struggle, women struggle through hormone imbalances and the symptoms that arise associated with menopause and beyond, sometimes a lull in the libido. So what's this scream cream you talk about?
Scream cream is a combination of Viagra, theophylline, and arginine, made compounded at our compounding pharmacy into a cream. Women put it on the clitoral area and wait, just like men have to do, for about 45 minutes. And it basically increases your sensitivity and brings you back to like when you were 16 years old.
Wow. So your little topical application. Now, once again, listeners, this is great. This is scream cream. You'd have to get a prescription because Viagra is a prescription medication and it will have to be compounded by a compounding pharmacist. But easy, they're around everywhere. So it's Viagra. What are the other two ingredients?
Theophylline and arginine. They all dilate blood vessels.
Yeah, I was going to say those are vasodilators. So you get that blood rushing to that erectile tissue, you're going to have a lot more sensitivity. And I can understand why they call it scream cream. That's amazing.
Yes. Well, you know, okay. In the book, I have a great story about this woman who had a stroke. I had to put her on an antidepressant because she got mildly depressed afterwards. So her sensation was down and she had difficulties achieving orgasms. So I gave her the scream cream and it was like amazing. So she and her husband decided to go on a second honeymoon to Hawaii and they brought the scream cream and they were having so much fun in the hotel room screaming and laughing that the security people were banging on the door thinking that she was being beaten.
Okay. That is a testimonial right there for that yes, very effective topical application. And it's great because you don't have to take anything orally. It doesn't have to be metabolized by the liver. Right. All right. So let's talk about weight loss. Is there an effective way to lose weight without dieting? What is a secret based on your book, Healed?
Well, the secret is there is no secret. That basically eating a whole foods, healthy diet and watching the amount of calories that go in and what you expend is what it's all about. And in our society, we want fast results. So people that do Nutrisystems and all these different diets and lose tons of weight really fast will almost always gain it back because there's something called a set point. A set point is where your brain is used to your body being at a certain weight and it is programmed to get you back there. So what will happen is if you lose a lot of weight really fast, you will gain that weight back either by your body causing you to have cravings or, you just kind of think you've gotten there and you can go back to your old ways. And not only will you gain that weight back, but you may gain more because your body wants a cushion if you starve again.
Yep. We've all seen it happen over and over and over and over again. And I think that it's just devastating. And I do my best to just, help grease the skids for success with my patients who are wanting to lose weight. So we do it slow and we do it with purpose. We do it with goals and we do it effectively because you're right. There is no secret.
And that's the key. You must lose it slow, no more than a pound a week.
Yeah, and you know,
patient.
And you also say something that's really important to me as well, is treating the whole person. So yes. You can lose weight or go on a crash diet, but your brain still remembers. It's hanging out. It knows better. And it will work, unfortunately, against you if something goes unnaturally, such as weight loss or any other thing. You know, I think that I see that in substances, whether it's caffeine, whether it's alcohol, where that whole organ has to be treated as well and has to be part of the equation when we're dealing with something, a goal like this.
Yes, absolutely. And, you have to find something that works for you long term.
Exactly. And stick to it. I always say this is an endurance race. This is not running fast, short distances when it comes
to. Exactly.
Especially as we get into our fourth and fifth decades, you know, it's easier to put on weight. It's more difficult to take it off. And so it does need a very slow, purposeful, comprehensive plan. So I got some more questions for you. Is there
Sure.
an activity that will decrease the risk of Alzheimer's disease by 76%? Because I think there is. You say it in your book.
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that question. Yes, it is ballroom dancing. There was a great study. There was a wonderful study that was done in 2003. And they looked at some group of seniors, and they were between the ages of 75 and 85. There were 469 people in that study. And they followed them over 5 years and found that over that time, 124 developed dementia. And they looked at what kind of activities they were doing versus the people that didn't get dementia. And what they found, there are certain activities that don't really help very much in terms of protecting your brain. So cyclists, swimmers, golfers decrease their risk by 0%. People that read regularly decreased it by 35%. And people that did crossword puzzles by 47%. But there was this one activity that reduced the risk by 76%, and that was ballroom dance.
Wow. That is
amazing.
And
you might ask why.
Yeah.
And the reason why is that there's that back and forth while you're moving, while you're thinking, while you're getting the cues from the other person that builds new neural networks, and it keeps your brain young. It doesn't matter if you're good. It doesn't matter, you know, what dance you're doing. It's that partner dancing that it's all about.
Yeah, that's great.
So it's also good for other things. It's great for Parkinson's disease as well, because it bypasses the part of the brain that's diseased and builds new neural networks around it, and it really helps Parkinson's patients with movement.
Okay, and we've got 2 minutes. You also talk about there's evidence that dance can help with balance, depression, and social anxiety as well. So it's prevention. Dance, we got to get out and dance more. I think our prescription pads should just be like, okay, you're just right, you got to go dance. You know, Dr. Robin, this is such a fascinating, you are such a fascinating woman. I really thank you for being here on Mindful Medicine, because this is what we're all about. I want to encourage everybody to get your book Healed. You can find it on the website, www.wellhealed.net. And where else?
At Amazon.com.
And, oh, that little small place called Amazon. You can find it there as well. And then you can find Dr. Miller, too, at Doc Robin Miller on Facebook. So that's facebook.com/Doc Robin Miller, and also facebook.com/healed. Folks, this is the real deal. We know that landscape is confusing. That's why we're here. We're just trying to sift through all this information. And the best thing about Dr. Robin Miller is she takes that cutting edge science and then blends it with some basic key advice. It's not woo-woo. It's basically thinking things through and helping you stay well and open up your mind to do so. So this is Dr. Lucille. Thank you so much for joining me. And until next time.